Welcome to another episode of the Gonzo Chronicles. This is Cyrus Alderwood, and we have a special guest today. I'm just going to hand it over to her. What are we talking about today?
We are talking about dirty limericks.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth Dice Cooper. I've gotten quite a few emails asking to have you back because we talked about some fun stuff before. Everybody had a good time. If they thought they had fun back then, yeah, wait till we get into dirty limericks today. So what is today? St. Patty's, March 17th.
You already have me drinking, Cyrus. So this is the Drunken Cooper Show.
This is the job well done. Yes.
On your wonderful podcast talking about dirty stuff. It doesn't get any better than that, does it?
Well, not much. No. I mean, you know, we could be doing this out back on the patio with a cooler. And let the neighbors be offended by this shit. Listen, I'm going to give a fair warning. There was a while back, I don't know if you know about this. Sometimes I'll do the intro of the music and I'll slow the music down or I'll lower it down. And I'll drop in a your mom joke. And then I'll raise the music back up. I don't know why I do that. Just shits and giggles, I guess.
Yeah.
And sometimes offer people like viewer mail, like, you know, email me or whatever. And I get an email from a lady signed it Catherine the Piss. Okay, not Catherine the Great, but Catherine the Piss. Not even pissed, but P-I-S-S. And I'm like, I can see her last name in the email address. You're like, what are you doing that for? But her beef was like, you talk about some cool stuff, kind of funny, but, you know, my kid's here. Do you have to, like, drop your mama jokes? So I actually, you know, dropped another one for her child to take to school, show and tell. If you're easily offended today, if you're a delicate little snowflake, just turn off the show right now. You don't want to be here. If you don't want any rough language, I'm sorry. It's St. Patty's. Elizabeth's drinking. I'm having a beer. I'm having a beer. It's day drinking, right? So
day drinking, as we say it in the South.
Day drinking. I'm here in Central Appalachia. Yeah, drinking. That kind of language is right up my alley. Actually, there's an entire dictionary to, like, translate. We should do a Southern dictionary. One better than Foxworthy did. With dirty Southern limericks. I should have thought of one of those, but I didn't.
So these are sort of built upon the original Irish limericks of what you would take into the pub. Because that's basically your pub experience in Ireland, is it's storytelling. So this is built upon storytelling. And this, of course, has gone way over the edge of the dirty side. But are you Irish?
I have a little bit of Irish in the family and some German. So basically, you get a few beers in me, I'll tell some dirty jokes and pick a fight. You know?
Perfect.
Perfect night at the pub. Too bad I don't have a pub crawl here. We could have done this in a bar. That would have been fun.
That would be fun. Now, oh my gosh. So, yes, you're throwing out all these great ideas for future shows.
So, you did a couple limericks online earlier, I noticed, and I thought that was so funny. You want to drop one or two of them out there that you did online?
Well, I could. Those are all ones that, you know, first I thought I've got to do something funny because it's St. Patrick's Day, and that's what you do. You start drinking as soon as you wake up because it's Irish. And you got to feed those roots. So you do that. You send the kids off safely on the school bus and then just start drinking. And I thought, what's funny? Limericks are funny. What's even funnier? Dirty limericks. So that was all of those, the three of them I put out there, that's somebody else's work, right? And I actually have some that are my own that I've written. I don't know how good they are.
Yeah, we decided to... For the show, we were going to write a few of our own, try these out, see what happens. So I'm going to start one off. It's not really a limerick, but let's go back to Andrew Dice Clay. Anybody who's ever heard of Andrew Dice Clay, either you love the guy, think he's hilarious, or you're massively offended. So this is not really a limerick. This is a dirty nursery rhyme. But Jack and Jill went up the hill, both with a buck and a quarter. Jill came down with 250. All right, I'm going to go ahead and read this one, too. Hickory dickory dock. Some chick was sucking my cock. The clock struck two. I dropped my goo and dumped that bitch on the next block. So that's...
I thought Andrew DeClay did that as your wife was sucking my cock.
He might have. One of my favorites is not a limerick. It's called Little Boy Blue. He needed the money. Oh, my gosh. I'm not even getting into the old Mother Hubbard. But let's jump into, you wrote one, and you wrote several, actually. Let's hear one of yours.
Okay. All right. This one's called Maverick and Joe. There once was a man who swore he hated the dress the whore wore. He didn't see it coming. His junk was thrumming. Yet she swung wide and tore his bits to fair war. For the result of that insult, said the whore.
I love that juvenile mindset. I was like, you challenged me to write one, and I'm like, you know, the first thing I thought of, my God, why did I have to think of Monica freaking Lewinsky?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, all right. So the president couldn't wait to give Monica his wiener. He was perverse. She wanted her sex cleaner. So she whipped out her breast, and he ruined her blue dress. Now the press couldn't be any meaner.
That's awesome.
Bill Clinton, thank you for the memories, Bill Clinton. From the 90s.
Awesome.
Every parent in America had to explain to children what a blowjob was. Our fearless leader.
Exactly. Or the other half of the parents, like my parents, which I was a teenager at the time, they kind of, you know, looked, that nervous side-eye look back and forth, like, see if she reacts. Does she know what this is? Because she shouldn't know what this is. And I'm like, dude, I'm 17. I know what this is.
Yeah. It's like, hey, yeah, do you know what this is? I went to prom. Like, of course I know what this is. That's terrible. Terrible.
Yes. But, all right, so I have another one for you.
Yeah.
Ready. All right, this one's called Mrs. O'Malley. I don't know why I went with Mrs., because obviously there's no Mr., so maybe it was the wine. In the lake of great pleasure, Mrs. O'Malley found it with no treasure. Since she couldn't find much joy, she reached for her toy and made such a noise, chased off all the boys, and named her right arm Sally. It sounds like Mrs. O'Malley's not interested in a Mr. O'Malley, so maybe, I don't know.
I think she found her best friend.
She did.
I think she did. Oh, man. All right, serious question. Women with toys, do they name their toys?
A lot of women do. I don't. But a lot of women do. However, I just have the trusted and true, you know, I don't have like a full toolbox collection like some women do. I mean, they have like, they need the cork board and hangers to hang them all up, and they're all named. Not so much. You know, I keep the favorites and throw out the ones that are no good.
Wow. You know, I remember when I was in college, I was dating this girl, names unnamed, and she asked me, I went over to pick her up at her apartment. We were going out. We dated for a little while, and kind of that getting to know you thing. And I don't know if she just forgot to put her toys away. Man, I kind of wondered what kind of sadistic shit this girl was into. Because she asked me, she was like, listen, I need to run to the bathroom. I left my coat on my bed. Can you go back there in my bedroom and get the coat? Blah, blah, blah. She had things sitting out on the nightstand. I counted like 13 different toys. I'm like, is this girl running a collection? What the hell? Like, I was hoping she was selling them on the side or something, but like, my God, what is this girl into?
13's a little much. I mean, does it take you that long to orgasm that you've got to, like, go through multiples?
Maybe she just liked the variety. I don't know. There were, like, multiple sizes and colors, and I'm like, well, what the hell? Anyway, that was an interesting experience.
I don't think you can tell color down there.
I'm sure you can't down there, but... Maybe she just liked the rain. Now, I'm colorblind, I will admit. But it looked like she had a color spectrum. Like blues and reds and yellows and blacks and whites. And I'm like, all right, sure. whatever floats your boat. But see, like, I don't know, guys don't have toys. None of us have toys.
Yeah,
we have an imagination, if that.
There's toys for guys.
Yeah, but I don't know, what kind of guys go and buy all those toys? That's what I wonder.
Well, I think we're supposed to buy them for you.
Oh, is that how that works?
Yeah.
Man, no one ever told me. I guess I didn't, like, you know, didn't get to that base, or maybe I skipped that base. I don't know.
You know what I find really interesting, and I know that you and I are about the same age, and I'm not close to 50 yet. It's coming somewhere in my future, but not yet. But what I've noticed is that men, especially 30s and younger, they're very jumpy. Like, they don't want you to do any, like, no toys, no none of that kind of stuff, for most of them. And then after they're 50, they're just like, yeah, fuck it, whatever. Oh, that feels great. And it's like, I wonder what happens to a guy after 50, where they just, like, all the cards are on the table.
Is it a midlife crisis, maybe? Or, like, my midlife, I haven't had one, or maybe I have, and I don't know it. But I just hope I come out of it with a nice sports car. I'm not asking for much, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I can tell some. I sent you a book a long time ago called Tales from the Sunset Pub. Now, there is a couple of my friends that are quite freakish, and I'm not going to mention any names. I will tell you an Andrew Dice Clay story. A friend of mine, Blaine, actually, used to hang out with him all the time in Cincinnati, and I know he listens to this show. I guess he was living with a girl at the time, and she was a nice girl. She was always, pretty cool. But sometimes she would just, like, go into this, I don't know if there's some weird bipolar thing, but she would, like, it was either you're really nice or it's, like, bitch mode times 12. No one can handle it, right, except him, and he kind of knows how. She would always laugh at Andrew Dice Clay. One night we were sitting out on the back deck drinking beers. We had the radio set in the window so we could turn it up a little bit and hear it while we were outside. Now, mind you, we're not turning it up for the neighbors to hear this. It was, you know. She came in pissed, raging pissed, slammed the door and locked it, cranked up Andrew Dice Clay loud, like enough to get the cops called on you loud. And living right next door were the Penguins, or the Nuns, that I always called them, the Penguins. There was these nice ladies next door, and a light went on. I'm like, oh, shit, man, the Penguins are up. You're a Dice fan. And I felt horrible. I had to, like, climb the fence to get out of there that night. Oh, my God. But, you know, like I said, but she was never offended by it before. But all of a sudden, she wanted to be offended by everything. We survived. We drank. I gave it a couple of days before I went back over there. But, yeah, we survived that episode. Now, I don't know if the next man that dated her survived. I doubt it.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
So, I want to know, after that story, did you climb into the Nun's backyard, or did you go to the other neighbor on the other side to get out?
Well, it's funny, because they had a fence that, like, closed off the end of their driveway where they could pull up. So I climbed out, and I was actually in their driveway, but the fence was, like, closed shut. You couldn't open it. So I'm inebriated. I'm drunk as hell at that point, right? So, and thankfully, I live two blocks away. So I'm trying to climb over, and I've got these just ratty jeans on. We'd been down at the pub half the night. You know, I'd run up like a $50 tab down there before I go back there and pounding booze and talking baseball and listening to Dice Man. And the fencing was sharp at the top, like something you would see, like a wooden picket fence, but really sharp. Oh, I was so nervous for my junk. Like, I was like, I'm not getting much use out of it, but I sure don't want to hurt them. You know? It was terrible. I'm like, I don't want to hurt my nuts over dice. I really don't. I mean, that would be a terrible. And if that happened, the son of a bitch should give me free tickets for life. But thankfully, thankfully I got out of there unscathed. Yeah. All right, I got another limerick for you.
Okay.
There once was a young woman named Jill. She was looking for a life-changing thrill. So her crush showed up. So her crush showed her his big niner, took her out to a diner, and left her holding the bill. That's not too dirty, but... All right, here's another one for you. This is...
Okay.
Melissa loved to show off her beaver. She'd give all the young men the fever until one guy slipped her his wing and didn't bother to pull out his thing, but she paid him back with a cleaver.
Oh, I like that. I like your use of wing and thing. That's really nicely done.
Yeah, and it's almost like Edgar Allan Poe-ish.
That's nice.
Paving like back that. Of the cleaver. That's a scary. That's like Lorena that, Bobbitt scary.
Yeah, that yeah. I wouldn't date her a second time. Not at all. Oh, so I have one. This one is probably one of the dirtier ones. And then I kind of went with it, so it's a little bit longer. But it's called The Pub on the Hill. The pub on the hill requires great skill. In there is a lass who drinks cum by the glass. You might say, alas, if it weren't for her ass wide and full of gas. They only give her a pill. They once gave her a pill to cure her ill. Found her at mass with her glass, washed her sins away with Father McGill. Leaving the hill for a thinner lass. Alas, she has no glass, fit with pair of jugs. One by one, in came the lugs, looking for the girl with the ass and the glass, finding her there with mugs of air. This will do, coming in a few to stare.
I see a book of dirty limericks coming in the future. Cooper and Alderwood. We'll call it dick jokes and beer.
And wine.
And wine.
So what beer are you drinking?
I just got Swill. Miller Lite.
Very nice.
It's St. Patty's. I will admit I'm a beer snob. I really am. I don't know if that's something worth bragging about, but like if you're going to drink beer, drink a good beer. Hey, I can get a sixer of Miller Lite for like $9 and something, right, in the bottle. I can get Sierra Nevada Pale Ale for about $12. Mm-hmm. More alcohol content, but I like the taste better. I like more craft beers.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. I tried a Shock Top once, and it was orangey, and it was very citrusy, and I'm like, oh, this is light. I like mm-hmm. this. It's more of the pale ale. Which company is it that has the, I think it's called Honey Blonde. Man, it was a long time ago that I was drinking that. And I started my beer course in, you know, college with Heineken. So it kind of started expensive.
Yeah, I can see that. Because when I used to have friends who would come over with like Natural Light, Natty Light. I'm like, don't even bring that in my apartment. Even if I was in college and I had no money, I'm like, listen, I'll drink tap water before I'll drink Swill like that, you know? And so it got to the point where things like...
It's kind of yeasty and watery, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gross. Okay. And I know people who drink Pabst Blue Ribbon all the time, PBR, and like, you know, why? Give me a good lager. I'll take a dark beer. I'm kind of a heavy guy anyway, so... I mean, it's not like I'm always on a diet or something, but you know, if you're gonna have a steak and a baked potato or a meal, you know, do you really want to like chase it down with some shit like that? I don't. I just don't. Now,
And you're in Yingling country.
Yeah, I do enjoy Yingling here and there. It's pretty good. It's not bad. Actually, one of my favorite beers is by Great Lakes Brewing Company. It's called the Edmund Fitzgerald. That is an excellent, excellent beer. Actually, on my website, I did a blog where I talked about my top 10 beers. And I keep on Twitter harassing Sierra Nevada Pale Ale that I should be their official spokesman. I should be the norm of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. I should be going around to bars, sitting at the end, you know, talking to people, buying rounds, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I could totally be Norm from Cheers. Good. I would have no problem. Maybe one day, if we get enough listeners on the podcast, they'll sponsor it. I'm not holding my breath.
That would be nice.
Damn good beer, though. Yeah. Exactly. Speaking of shows, before we get any more dirty limericks, let's pitch yours for a second. Tell us a little bit about Caffeinated Cooper Show and some of the other shows you're doing. I'm going to grab myself another beer as you talk.
Sure. Yes, I might send a message out to my kids to bring me the rest of the bottle of my St. Michelle Riesling. So I do have a show that airs on Facebook as well as YouTube. It's been running since 2017. It's called The Caffeinated Cooper Show through Cooper Studios. You can find the show on Facebook either under Elizabeth Cooper on Facebook or E. Cooper Studios, as well as Elizabeth Cooper on YouTube. And if you would like to write in, suggest a show, want to be a guest on the show, you can email ecooperstudios with an S at gmail.com and tell me anything. Just chat if you'd like to. But it's a nice little mixed media show. I have done some sketch comedy that I really want to get back to, but you know what? That takes a little bit of crafting, and with all these kids at home through the pandemic, it's been a challenge. So we are doing our interviews. I'm also doing Monday nights with you. We have a murder mystery night on Monday.
That's right.
We usually do that about once a month. I also do once a month with actor Ken Dodge. He's also a musician, and he's really kind of cool. He does Gene Simmons as, you know, front man for Kiss, and he's got like the real deal outfit. So he does some cool stuff in Nashville, and then just recently paired up with Michael Harrison, which is the road captain from roadcaptain.com. And we're going to do like more of a lifestyle, what chaps your hide type show.
Yeah.
So it's fun. If you want some fun media to stream in your ear, it's a great show to listen to as well as watch.
Yeah. Now the one with the Ken Dodge, really cool guy. You guys talk a lot about where you've been in acting, and he's been in acting and music, and that's been your careers. And he talks a lot about, you guys just got into a lot of detail that was, I thought if you're trying to break into the industry, that is a must listen to show, because you're giving people the ins and outs, the highs and lows, what to expect, what not to expect, you know, the pros and cons.
Totally. That show was real great, and we wound up doing two different segments. So we did Monday night and only got through half of the bullet points. So we wound up doing a Friday of that same week as well to wrap it up. And each segment's an hour and a half. But between Ken, who has been doing this for a long time now, he has also been a detective. He has been in the military. He was an EMT for a long time. So he has a really interesting background. But he's also has a career as an actor, and he's worked across amazing actors, some of which I would love to work with, for about 25 years. And then myself, where I got into it officially in late 2013. And so we just addressed all the questions that people ask, and especially in the Atlanta area, I get a lot of parents with children where they realize that the child might be interested in the arts, or maybe they're just very precocious, or they think they have a good look. So we started from the very, very beginning stages until you're at the point of acquiring an agent and a manager and, you know, different things like set etiquette, terminology. We just covered it all. So thank you so much. I'm glad that you watched that.
Well, and I watched The Road Captain. Was that last night? Okay.
That was Monday night.
Okay.
That was a really interesting show. We tried it one way where we're like, okay, we're just going to talk about lifestyle stuff. And then our personalities, you know, so interesting doing shows with people where I'm sure that you've seen this. Different personalities just kind of click and realize that, oh, wow, you know, this person laughs really easily, or this person has a really big personality, or this, that, and the other. And that's something I realized. So we are changing it just a little bit. On Monday, we talked about kids, they grow, and then what do you do with them? So it was more of a college entrance as far as the kids going off to college financially, and what's it like to be a parent sending your kids to college? What are the things to watch out for? We talked about that. We also talked about being a biker, being in that culture. And I said, you know, it's so interesting because I was in that for a very small period of time before I started having baby after baby after baby. And it's kind of frowned upon to be on the back of a Harley pregnant. So I didn't do that. But before I was pregnant for the second round, we went to Daytona. And I'm like, this is so crazy. We're like at a topless bar talking about Jesus. How does that happen? So we talked about religion within the bike community. It was really interesting.
I noticed there's a lot of religion within the biking community. I was doing a book signing at a place called Big Walker Lookout. It's just kind of like a little arts depot, but it's on a scenic route. And this is over the near Virginia, North Carolina border. And this scenic route people will drive. And I love it because they get up there and they see this little arts place. And it has this huge fire tower. People go to the very top and see forever. So people just stop. And we have on the weekends, when I would be there, there would be live music outside. It's like a place they call On the Crooked Road. And musicians will show up and sing. And you can tip them. And it's all outside. It's so fun. And I remember I heard all these bikes coming up the mountain. And all these bikers stopped by. And I'm like, and immediately, you know, you think Hell's Angels, you know, who's the Mayans, who's going to kick my ass or make fun of my little books. These guys are like sweethearts, nice as can be. Just absolutely just boisterous, happy, happy-go-lucky. You know, older, obviously, a little older generation because it wasn't like younger. It seems like younger people get on those little small crotch rockets, as you call them, and they just haul ass up and down the road. These guys are out to experience life. They're enjoying the day. And I thought it was awesome. I've met several of them doing that. And they actually raise money for kids' causes. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. If you could go back in a different era and like be part of like that scene, the motorcycling across the country, what time frame would you go to? Or would you do it now?
For motorcycles. I would probably, it would probably be more futuristic. I kind of like where I'm headed just as far as experience mixed with wisdom. So I think I would enjoy it more going forward than I did then. I was a little shell-shocked then, believe it or not. Growing up, I was extremely modest, very shy, painfully shy, to the point to where I don't think I spoke for a couple of years in my teen years. I just took it all in. And then after that period of time, like all this weird wisdom came out. So it was very strange, you know, sort of like Mork and Mindy. I was inside the egg for a while.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after having children and stuff, I opened up. But going down to Daytona was very interesting because it was, I was dating my second husband at the time, so I wasn't married yet, and I was probably 28, but I had already had two girls, so I, you know, of course, I thought I was so much older than I was. In hindsight, 28, my gosh, I was just a kid, you know, I was a few years older than some of those girls running around the assless chaps with the G-string, although I was too modest for that. I didn't partake in that. Now I'm like, why didn't I? Damn it, I had the butt for it then. No, I think futuristically, and I do believe that's what happens for a lot of people, you know, not only are those toys, the really nice bikes and stuff, they're expensive, and then they're expensive to insure. So I think that's why you see many older people, and then you get the older guy that has a 20-year-old on the back of his bike, and that's where you kind of get some of the younger ones in there. And you're right. The young guys just want to be on the, unfortunately, what my ex-sister-in-law, who's in medical, she always called them death sickles because they're, you know, they're just one wrong move and either somebody falls off the back or you get into an accident, you really get hurt.
Yeah.
So my answer very long-winded because thank you, Chateau St. Michel Riesling.
Sweet.
Futuristic. How about you?
You know, I would go back to that era right after World War II. When the country was wide open, people could hitchhike without worrying too much about their safety. I wouldn't do the 70s because that's when you had like those biker gangs that were getting dangerous, Hell's Angels and those types of gangs that were kind of growing, a lot of drugs being transferred or trafficked by them and you know, a lot of heavy crime started. But I would go back to the beat generation, you know, like the Kerouacs and the wrote about On the Road and the Dharma bums. I would go back to that generation and just learn. I would be on a bike and I would have a library rolling with me, you know, of books that I would pick up from town to town and read on the road and just explore America. I mean, to this day, I still, one of my bucket, well, everybody probably has this as a bucket list thing. I want to travel the country just to get to know the country. There was a, I'm trying to think who it was that, Steinbeck, actually, you know, who he wrote his classic literature. you know, Depression era stuff, and he knew America back then. But then in his later years, he went and traveled the country again, supposedly. Okay, didn't happen the way he wrote it, but he wrote a book called Travels with Charlie, which was his dog, and he wanted to go back out and rediscover the America he didn't know. And of course, he shit all over the city of New Orleans for racism and things like that. You can find that everywhere. Why he picked New Orleans, I have no idea. But to me, New Orleans, like, reminds me of I would definitely go through there even now, because it reminds me of this line from a movie called Skin Deep with John Ritter. It's one of my favorite movies. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but an amazing movie. And one of this girl asked him, like, where are you from? He's like, where was I born, or where my soul belongs? And he's like, both. He goes, well, I was born in so-and-so, but I come from New Orleans, you know, for his soul. Just because of the history, the culture, the jazz, the blues, and I really love all that stuff. I would love to travel back through there. So, yeah, I would travel America even now, because in my head, like we see on social media all day long, how divided everybody is. I think that is definitely media-driven. It's political-driven. And I think if you travel around, if somebody could write a book on the real America that we see, we would see like there's 10% on the left fringe, 10% on the right fringe. They're the loudest voices out there. The 80% in the middle, we're all cool. And people don't realize that. They think we're all enemies. 50% versus 50%. And I don't think that is America we live in. It's the America, unfortunately, we're sold a bill of goods on every night on some, you know, shit propaganda news of whatever choice we choose.
I absolutely live in the suburbs of Atlanta, and so I can't speak about how it actually is in the cities. I think the media has driven this narrative hardcore in cities, but therefore I can only speak on what I know. And what I know, when I go to the doctor's office, when I go to my kid's school, when I go to the grocery store, everybody is just as nice, just as welcoming, just as accepting, just as willing to have a conversation with you or hold a door open or help you out across, no matter who you are, as they were before all this craziness was sensationalized.
Yeah.
And so that, in my mind, I'm thankful for that, because I hope a lot of people are doing what I'm doing, where yes, I am watching the news. I want to be open-minded, so I listen to right, far right, I listen to left, far left, and middle. I listen to all of it because I want to have a well-rounded perspective. And when I'm listening to the left or the right, I just sit there and go, this is crazy. And I'm glad for that thought process of this is crazy, because I'm hoping that all the people that I've met in my day that were equally kind to me as I was to them are sitting down saying the same thing. As long as we have a conscious awareness that the media is driving the crazy, then maybe there's still hope for a well-rounded life of just loving the people around you and not being so nutbaggish with everything.
Yeah. I think the minute the 80% figure that shit out en masse, the game is over. Like, for a lot of the political activism, like the divide and conquer. You know, I did a podcast on that a while back. A couple of beers, went on a rant, you know. But it's true. It doesn't matter which side you're on. You know, left, right, you know, just people have to get out of that and think, what's normal, what's pragmatic. You know, there are solutions to a lot of problems that happen in the inner city. Just like where I live at in, you know, throughout a lot of Appalachia, there's a lot of problems. There are solutions for those problems, but people are too dogmatic that are in the so-called leadership that they're not pragmatic. And that's what we need. And I think we've skewed how much power we give people that are in office and in media, because we look at them and we think they're leaders. These people are not leaders. They were elected to represent us, not to lead us. We are the leaders. And I think when that 80% gets that en masse, that whole bullshit game is over. We go into a better country and culture.
I totally agree with you. You know, there's, I am a part of a lot of different groups, because one of the things that I do with my podcast is that I want to share it out to applicable groups based upon the person I'm interviewing. So with that said, there's some mommy groups. My daughter had a baby at 18, so I'm in a mom of pregnant teens group, things like that. And they post a lot of questions. And what I find most interesting are the questions posted by some of the young moms, and they're very, very confused, you know, and there's so many different issues. There's so many issues of families that can't feed their children, not to make the show go in a really heavy direction, because I know that we're talking about dirty limericks, but I am a total proponent in what you're saying of make sure that you are leading yourself, because there was one question that came across, and she was talking about something that had happened in her child's elementary school. They were encouraged to bring in devices because, just like my children at our school, they bring in a device so that they can connect to their classroom portal, whatever that may be. We happen to be using Google Classroom. She was using something else. And her child brought the iPad that the child was using back home, and she checked the history. Well, within the history, they were searching something inappropriate for a fourth grade child. She brought it to the attention of school. The school kicked it back and basically said, nope, not my problem.
Wow.
And I stopped for a moment and I said, but wait, you have a child that's going to federal education, going to public school. You pay taxes. You pay property taxes. You pay state taxes. You pay federal taxes. They work for you in a huge sense. And I try to remind parents that you have a large say in this, because not only did you sign on and allow them to guide and educate your child, but your voice matters in this. So stand up and make sure that the right things are happening, and you have resources, you have a school board, you have legal to protect you if you have to go in that direction.
You're right. You're right. And a lot of people look at the federal level like that's where all the power comes from, but that's complete bullshit, because we have power locally, and the things that impact your life, my life, everyone's lives, our children, your local school board, your county school boards, your county board of supervisors, your town mayor and supervisors, you know, board of directors there, local businesses. These people need to hear what people locally feel as far as the local culture and the local expectation. That's where we make a difference, is locally and not necessarily federally. Because you could have a state hand come down or a federal hand come down, but, you know, your county can block a lot of that. And I don't know how you feel about, like, homeschooling kids, but I'll ask you this, just knowing you, I bet during this entire pandemic time that your kids are home a lot, I bet they learned a hell of a lot too.
We had a very interesting experience. So I had had children at home on a homeschooling platform before the whole pandemic happened. My two oldest girls were homeschooled for 3 years. And we had a great experience, and there is so much more time for enrichment because you don't have classroom shift. You don't have times where you have to go to the cafeteria and back, or recess and back, you know. So there is so much time wasted at a brick and mortar school, and wasted, you know, that's kind of quote unquote, because it is put in there for not only necessity, but it adds to their socialized time. And as we've learned, you have to have social aspect to your life or you just go absolutely batshit crazy.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to have, because it was my largest amount of kids at home. I had a college freshman. I had a high school junior, a second grade, third grade, and seventh grade. So all five kids at home learning. Now, of course, I didn't need to, but I had to make sure that the junior was doing what she had to do. My college freshman is already a self-starter in education, so I didn't have to do much. But the other three, man, it kicked my butt, because my lifestyle has changed to where I own multiple businesses and I do my studio. Well, my studio just had to shut down, and that was painful. I saw the entertainment industry just halt and push itself back years, and it's going to take years to rebound. So that was hard. So there were a lot of things going on. And yes, we had a lot of enrichment. I took advantage of moments where, for example, one of my sons, he was studying bees and how they build their hives and what they need. So what did we do? Well, we built a hive, a home for the bees, and then we went back out to the tree that we hung it in to see if the bees were inhabiting it. Or the other son, he was learning about germination of plants. So we planted seeds, and we planted some in soil, and we planted some in bags so they could see it root, and they could see the whole system. And so those are the nice things that you get to do at home that you don't always get to do in classroom.
Yeah, you know, that's I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised because we'd never talked about homeschooling or anything like that before. But yeah, I was just wondering, your kids probably learn real life things too, and just so many interesting, because it was an opportunity. A lot of people would look at it. My sister's a teacher, and she told me that, you know, a lot of people look at this like, this sucks, my kids not learning this, that, and the other. But, you know, she did remind people, parents are in control. That was not a loss. The only thing that's lost is the opportunity you didn't take advantage of. And that's so hard to tell parents when you're a teacher, because they want to chew your ass for it. You know, but, you know, she's done a good job with her daughter, who at home too, you know. She has an older son who's out in the workforce now. So, you know, but that's cool. I want to maybe see if you can tell us a little bit about Chronically Funny, and then give us another limerick.
Sure. So Chronically Funny, I started because, like, you know, I was just saying, so the pandemic happened about a year ago, right? And we just saw it. We were the last ones. So we saw this avalanche coming towards us, and the entertainment industry just halted, and the kids came home from school, so the shows had to stop, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, but I have to do something. And I realized what I was doing each night was I was scouring the internet, Facebook, anywhere I could look for something funny. And so I started a group. It's called Chronically Funny. It is only on Facebook. And you can search it, Chronically Funny, or join me on my timeline. There's a couple of links to Chronically Funny. And it just really took off. It is anything and everything that is funny. Not necessarily lewd, but not necessarily not lewd.
Yeah.
Not, you know, there's clean humor, there's dad jokes, there's videos, and it's all really, really, really funny, I think.
Yeah.
So it has built a good following that all of a sudden, you know, numbers would grow. Well, part of that was correct. What I didn't realize was that Facebook won't allow me to make it public again. So there is, you know, you do have to, like, save the pictures to then repost it out somewhere else if you want to share stuff, which is a total downer. But, yeah, it's something like the members of the group think it's private. So if you change it, then it's violating the members of the group. Like, it's so weird, it's, right?
Well, people want to be exclusive. So when it's private, you get people like, I want to be a part of that. Yeah, I go there every day just because the memes are so funny. And, you know, you don't have to worry about, like, who are we offending today? Because it's kind of crazy. We're in this world where, like, was it last night the Grammys, or the night before, whenever the Grammys were, this week, past weekend or whatever, that, I mean, you got Cardi B and shaking her ass with wet ass pussy. And, like, but yet somehow we have to put a, you know, a little thing up before you watch the Muppets on Disney that this might be offensive. It's like, what the hell kind of cancel culture bullshit commie world is this? But it's only the loud people on that fringe, you know? Yeah. Most people are like us. People like us are like, the hell? You know? But Chronically Funny is a place where you can go and just like, hey, what the hell? You know, just have at it.
Exactly. And, you know, for the most part, there are some political jokes and stuff that comes up. But for the most part, it's actually stayed away from that, which I thought was really interesting because it's organically stayed away from the political memes and the political stuff. And I'm so happy for that, to be honest with you, because I think it's harder when you're not immediately making fun of the obviously stupid.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I like to have to dig for the stupid for a moment, because I'm a huge proponent of making fun of stupid.
That's a good way to put it. But yeah, it organically happened. You don't see that. And I think the problem with political humor these days, growing up on Saturday Night Live, it didn't matter whether it was Reagan president, Bush president, Clinton, whatever. They were all like fair game. Johnny Carson and Jay Leno treated the ball as fair game. And it was funny. So it didn't matter if you were a Democrat or a Republican watched it. You got it. It was cool. It was funny.
The earth that you really cancel are comedians.
Yeah.
Comedians for the joke, because that is their livelihood. So I think there's a couple of them. Sarah Silverman, who has been a fairly strong left Democrat for quite a while, she was on a podcast over the weekend calling it out, saying, you know, this is ridiculous. Jokes are jokes. We have to be able to laugh at ourselves, mm-hmm. and we have to be able to laugh at groups of people, because it's funny because it's true. So can we just get back to the truth, and the cancel culture has to go away? So it's very interesting to see that cancer that is cancel culture, and it's coming to its end, I think, if I can predict it, because you look at Disney tried to hang on and go along with it, and they've gotten rid of some of their actors and their actresses, right? But now they're going after all of the movies that you and I grew up on. Eventually, it's going to start to hurt the pockets of some of these big corporations, and they're going to have no choice. Like, okay, this is ridiculous. Go away.
Yeah, and they're going to have to step away from the political realm and stay away from it. Because you're right. Like, I love that show, The Mandalorian, and Gina Carano. Is that how you say her name? Serrano or Carano?
Yeah.
Carano. She was fired. Now, one of my favorite comedians is Bill Burr. He's going to throw his balls out there in the path of where anybody's walking. He doesn't care. Now, the reason I like him and guys like Chappelle, and like to a degree Silverman too, you know, she's funny too, is that they're not afraid to step into the firing lane, because comedy, it should be abrasive. It should be a way we turn that mirror and look back at ourselves and like, oh, I freaking get it now, you know? And at the point where you see comedy stepping back and being politically correct, that's where the next Richard Pryor is born. The next Bill Burr is born in that era. The next Eddie Murphy. Because the stuff that Eddie Murphy said all those years ago, Richard Pryor, Sam Kinison, let's face it, even Mel Brooks could not make the movies that he made in that era today. But even though it's divisive and incendiary, and like probably people today watching it would be like, oh, we got to cancel Mel Brooks movies, you know, Blazing Saddles. Those two actors did more for race relations and people to look at it and say, I get the bullshit. I get it. And they move forward. Those guys did more for that than any political policy or any bill passed or whatever, ever. You know?
That's what is so funny, Cyrus, because you and I want to say, are probably comparable in age. And at our age, you begin to realize that you've seen a good amount, to where, you know, we have a good amount of wisdom to realize that all this stuff is orchestrated. And the moment that somebody has their pants down, we start laughing at it, we all come back together again.
You're right.
You cannot have a whole world full of people coming from many different cultures and just expect that you can take your big eraser and erase what makes a person a person. What makes a person is our heritage and our culture. And in each culture, there's some hilarious shit.
Yeah, and in each era, people are different, have different values, and those values change. But in this era right now, if you're one of these cancel culture people, and going after comedians and movies and this, that, and the other. Think about this. 50 years from now, somebody's going to look back at you like you're a damn Neanderthal, and they're going to start canceling your ass. And how are you going to feel when no one shows up to stand up for you because your supposed values were righteous and perfect that we have to go back and apply it to everybody back in time? I want to know who read Orwell's 1984 and thought that shit was a good idea. because there's, if anybody can, like anybody listening, if you can think of somebody, email me. I don't care. You can think of one person who thought it was a good idea to limit free speech and cancel people out and burn books, and they were the good guys. Shit, tell me. I'd love to know because I've yet to find them.
No, I know it. I know. And there's some books, you know, put out there today that it's all the same class as stuff. It's like, gosh, you know, how many times does the same stuff have to keep circling around to realize that, you know, get off the wheel. Like, this stuff isn't working. We can't keep letting history repeat itself.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you this, and while you're talking, I'm going to grab another beer. But and I know you have limited time here, so I'll try not to keep you too much longer. But all the stuff that you talk about and all the shows that you do, have you at some point thought about kind of pinning down your own autobiography and as to the things? Because you've had some – you don't shy away from sharing anything with anybody. And that is a rare, rare thing to find in people that have the courage to do shit like that. Because people don't. Not even with their best friend. And you just like are open to anybody who wants to embrace it. So I'm going to shut up and let you talk. I'm going to grab a beer and I'll be
right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I'm glad that you asked me that question. I have always been afflicted with wearing my heart and my reality on my sleeve, and I'm really happy that I guess I have that ability. I just assume that all people who were quote-unquote real did. And yeah, I mean, I have gone through some stuff. You've gone through some stuff. So I have a hard time looking at my stuff as anything all that way out of the ordinary to sit down and write a book about. So I think at this point in time, I would have a really hard time writing an autobiography or even having a ghostwriter and just getting on the phone and yakking to them about that. But perhaps sometime in the future, you know, just with having all these little humans that have crawled out of my vagina and made this world theirs, there's so many different stories. You know, there's so many different things happening that I guess I could. I just never thought about it.
And I think the you know, the thing is, a lot of people may think the same thing. I don't have the stories to tell. If Miley Cyrus can write a book at 22 years old about her life experience, listen, those of us who have actually lived life and have scars, there's nothing new under the sun, and I know that. It's like with any book that I write, there's nothing new under the sun. I realize that. But if you can put a personal spin on it, and a lot of people just really want to gravitate to somebody else because, hey, me too, I was there too. And this validates my opinion or my thought or my feelings that I had at this time, or like, you know, bad times. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be just, you know, bitter, you know, but then they, you know, as you progress through life, you've had experiences where it's like, okay, I'm bigger than that now. And people sometimes need that point to say it's okay to get over this shit. And I think a lot of people maybe are not there. You know what I mean? And that's why books like that, people's personal lives resonate. Because especially if you've achieved that point of like, I'm bigger than the problems that I had to face, and here's why. And you know, people hang on to that.
You know, the one thing that I have thought of are certain goals. You know, if I can get to certain things in life, for instance, and I think maybe because I was created female, because a lot of women seem to have this issue, but I'm also noticing a lot of people coming back from war having had very harsh environments and harsh experiences and suffer with PTSD, also suffer with something that a lot of women suffer with, which is a very strong amygdala. And the amygdala, if you don't know what that is, it's part of your brain that's very gooey. And it holds on to everything. And that would be something I do suffer with. I am, if I'm to speak negatively of myself, I am not fun in an argument. It takes a long time to get into an argument with me because I sit silently until you've buried yourself. So, like, you know, you're very rarely going to win because you've already racked up so many wrongs. But then I have a hard time shaking those wrongs. My amygdala likes to hold on to them. So then if another argument comes up, it like all of the stuff comes up. So I think if I can find a remedy to that, that might be useful to those type, those groups, those people that hold on to things and have a hard time letting go, and possibly for PTSD sufferers. And that's sort of like cracking the code, right?
Yeah.
But kind of what I would say I'm waiting for. I think there's so many different autobiographies out there. Some of them are great. Some of them are like, I'm sorry, but who wants to read the life of Miley Cyrus up to 25? Like,
yeah.
Who wants to?
Yeah, I mean, it's but people do based on the names, you know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but then I'm like you. I look at some books. I'm like, yeah, I always kind of question, like, yeah, is this book I read good enough? And then I'll read something like, shit, yeah, my book was good enough. This guy had a bestseller, and I've sold 50 copies, you know. But you know, you can see, you know, but you know, good for people. I'm a capitalist all day long. I'll be a capitalist pig. And if somebody can sell a piece of shit and make a bunch of money off of it, awesome for them. But, you know, but it's, you know, but people have stories to tell. And I think it's just the fame that other people gravitate to because they look at people like role models or idols. And I'm not much for idolizing anybody. And when it comes to, I used to read a lot of autobiographies, but I stopped at some point because, and I don't want anybody to take this political, but I stopped reading autobiographies and stuff, especially from politicians, because I was always looking for like leadership tips and things like that you would find from people that have been in, you know, power and in business and things like that. But I remember watching after Barack Obama got elected, and there was such a – the guy could have done so much with that power that he had. And it didn't take long for a lot of people, you know, to be disappointed, Democrat, Republican, black, white, whatever. But that's politics and a politician. But I remember sitting back and watching the speech when he accepted the nomination or after not just the inauguration itself, but he came out in Denver and had these huge pillars that looked like something from Rome. I sat there, and the first thing I looked, I was like, I am not into idol worship. And then I saw these people chanting, yes, we can, yes, we can. And anytime I see people chanting slogans from politicians or whatever, hey, if you're not at a Van Halen or Kiss concert doing their slogans, then it doesn't matter to me. At that point, I'm like, wow, you know, I just can't get into that kind of reading because what am I going to learn from people like that? Because I don't want to be idolized. I'd rather be respected.
Right. And that you want the whole truth, not just what they want you to hear. You know, yeah. Especially with public office, it takes so much money. It takes a lot of networking and even more money to get to where they are. They're not going to tell you that in a book.
No. And if they did, it better be a deathbed confession because somebody's coming after your ass. So, but yeah, I mean, we've gotten into some funny shit, some deep stuff. No wonder people want you back on the show every time I turn around, like, hey, is Elizabeth coming back on? Because they'll tune into me being on your show and they're like, hey, is she coming back on? But all right, you want to do one more dirty limerick each, and then we'll do, and then we'll have to do dirty bits part two.
Okay, one more.
Dirty yeah. Bits part two. That's terrible.
Dirty Bits part two. We could do Dirty Bits part two. Let me figure out which one. Do you have one in mind? Of just because we both wrote six, didn't we?
I had five.
Okay.
I'm not as creative as you. So I had to stop.
Okay. I have a short one, and then I can keep the other two longer ones for next time for Dirty Bits. This one is called The Wedding. On the day of his wedding, he got a call from the whore from the night before. Needless to say, he paid her anyway, and his wife was richer the next day.
I love having the mentality of like a 15-year-old. Honestly, I do. It's my maturity level stopped at 27, just so you know. All right, I've got one more, and then I'll let you close this out, man, because that's too fun. That's hard to top. All right. This is terrible. Wendy used a 9-inch dildo. She played every night in her window. The crowd came from all around just to hear the screams and sounds and toss dollar bills at that bimbo.
I love it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so, hey, this has been my afternoon, folks. It's a work day, but it's St. Patty's, so who cares, right?
Yeah, that's kind of what I said. You know, I sat down to a pile of work, and I had already had a glass of wine. It was kind of like a fuck it waiting to happen. And so I got no work done. It's St. Patrick's Day. They can wait.
That's right. That's right. This is appropriate. Whether it sounds inappropriate or not, I don't care. But we'll definitely do another Dirty Bits part two. Or maybe, like I said, we could talk about Elizabeth's first time next time.
We could.
We could, Elizabeth's first time. I'll market that one on before I even record it and see how many people tune in for that one. That is hilarious. But anyway, Elizabeth, I thank you for coming on doing this. I mean, we kind of did this on the fly today, and it's kind of fun. It's fun to do that on the fly. I could do these twice a day probably if I had time.
I know it. Me too. That's one thing I'm looking forward to is, you know, when life slows down a little bit, I'm going to fill it with more of these podcasts, with more of awesome friends like you. We get together and we get to chat and let everybody else listen.
Yeah, it's fun. So again, tell everybody where they can catch, follow you and catch up with you.
Sure thing. You can follow me on Facebook under Elizabeth Cooper. You can find me on YouTube as Elizabeth Cooper. You can also follow me on Instagram as Cooper_Elizabeth_Cooper. And send us an email at ecooperstudios@gmail.com. Don't forget to catch the show on Monday nights at 9.
Yeah, and we've got a brutal topic coming up on the next Murders and Mysteries. And so you'll advertise that one on your Facebook. And folks, if you like the dirty talk, I'm gonna pitch it. Go to Amazon, look me up, Cyrus Alderwood. Get Tales from the Sunset Pub because this shit will be right up your alley. And thank you, Elizabeth, because you actually read a couple stories, and you're 90, no less, on Facebook Live from my book, and had like over 10 or 15,000 hits.
Oh, it was insane! I had no idea. I mean, I knew the writing was good. The stories were amazing. I was enjoying the book. And I'm like, well, let's just do this the night before I left for the beach with the kids. And so, you know, I'm driving 7-8 hours because we're pretty landlocked here in Atlanta. And I check back into it the next day in the afternoon. I'm like, this thing's at 9,000 views. What did I do? Was I naked? Like, what did I do?
No, you were... It wasn't my book at all. You're just hot. Yeah. So people are gonna watch, and you're reading and having a glass of wine, and you're 90. It's like, man, that's like the biggest compliment I think I've ever freaking had on one of my books. But if you ever post that up on YouTube, let me know.
It was totally right. So we're going to have to do that again. You'll guide me and tell me exactly what you want me to read, and we'll do that again.
Yeah, I've got the next Dick book is in the works. Gonzo Berry Dick, by the way, not anything... Listen, now that book, I was young.
We were expecting a coffee table book.
I was young and needed the money for that one. So
Dick by Cyrus Alderwood.
That's funny. Oh, my God. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Gonzo Chronicles. Elizabeth, you're welcome back anytime. Love having you on. People love hearing from you. So come back whenever you want. We'll do this often. And you enjoy the rest of St. Patty's. Have a drink for me. Yeah. I'm going to have one for you.
Thank you. Yes, cheers.
Cheers. Hey, thanks, everybody. And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever the hell else you see me. Anyway, thanks, everybody. I'll see you on down the road.